Inspired by my own journey with mental health, I founded Girls Talk, our own safe space where we share, listen, and support each other. So get cozy and join me, Adjoa Burr, for some much-needed Girls Talk.
I'm beyond excited to welcome my friend Richie Shazam on the podcast today. Richie is a queer model, artist, and activist who seeks to subvert the gender binary in everything she does. With the holidays around the corner, we're talking about difficult familial relationships and the beauty of found family. Now, here's Richie Shazam.
So I know lots about you. We've known each other for a very long time, weirdly, but I would love for you to introduce yourself to my wonderful Girls Talk community.
Well, I just wanted to say thank you so much for having me. I've been such a big fan of your incredible platform, and it's really awesome to just speak more like introspectively and like getting to like spread the word. I'm Richie. I'm a born and raised New Yorker. I'm a model, photographer, artist all around, and constantly evolving, constantly changing, constantly trying to make sense of the world we live in and how we fit or how we don't fit. And always on the hustle and bustle, in the grind, making shit happen, making really fun things, and also just making peace with all of the iterations of myself. You know, I think that so much of the strife that we go through as individuals in this world is not feeling enough or not feeling, you know, that we're being seen or being heard. So I've really have been understanding the power of my voice and the power of the things that I create and, you know, the power of healing and connectivity. And those are things that I don't treat lightly. I think it's really important how we treat one another and how we educate people.
So talking of iterations of self and understanding of self in its whole complexity, I'd like to start from the beginning, and I'd love to know what you were like as a kid.
Yes. You know, growing up in Queens, New York, my parents were from Guyana, South America, and I grew up in a very strong, conservative West Indian household that was very rooted in like culture, religion, and all of these sort of beautiful, weird contradictions. And I innately knew that I was different as a young child. So I really found myself in academia, found myself in books, and always constantly wanting to explore and find myself lost in visuals and imagery. And yeah, my childhood was by no means easy. You know, my parents were working like 7 days a week and my mom was really sick. And so I kind of grew up with this kind of caretaker identity where I was always helping my mom and being of service to her. And, you know, when a child is sort of forced to be an adult, there isn't a lot of time for you to like really be at peace with yourself because things are constantly fluctuating and life and death are really these very large ideas that you can't even grasp at that age. But I always just knew that I had to be present for her and our Aquarius. I'm an Aquarius. My mom was a Taurus and she was so...
I'm a Taurus.
Yes, me too. Yeah. So it's like growing up in that very weird, like strong, stubborn energy. I always felt like I was fighting with the bull, but my mom, like she was just like my biggest advocate and she really supported all of my dreams and ambitions. And I remember like key moments in my childhood, like when my mom was fully blind and couldn't see anything. And I had to sort of be her hands, her eyes, her feet, you know, really helping her navigate. And that also sort of helped building my like principles of femininity because I was helping my mom, you know, clothe her body, helping her put her makeup on, helping her with her nail polish, like helping her with clothes, and but also understanding the strength of being a matriarch. My mom would instill a lot of her values onto me in this very beautiful way because when someone loses the sense of vision and then all they have are like their voice and hearing and stuff, it like amplifies everything around them. And so I always found myself trying to make it as easy as possible for her to like exist, you know. And also there wasn't necessarily a lot of tools or language of, you know, just being a child and dealing with a sick parent. There weren't a lot of things that were accessible that could help make my journey easier. But all I knew, I just followed my intuition. And I know my mom was really grateful that I was there by her side, like helping her like administer her insulin and helping her like go to the doctors. And so I kind of also saw New York in a very interesting landscape, like growing up in Queens and coming into the city for her doctor's appointments and stuff. It definitely like opened my eyes to like, oh, there's a whole nother existence. Cause you know, growing up in these strong immigrant households, you're almost brainwashed into thinking one way about the world. You ingest everything that your families who have sacrificed so much to like start their families in New York in this like, you know, insane first world landscape filled with so many cultures and identities. Queens is such a melting pot of incredible people, but at the same time, they hold on to their culture so aggressively. And yeah. I felt like my voice was always sort of eliminated. Like I couldn't necessarily like speak. And anytime I would get into like any sort of conversation with my father, he would always be like, well, who's the parent and who's the child? And I would just be like, whoa, like I couldn't even speak on the things that I wanted to. So in a sense, it's very like, I was sort of blocked in even forming my identity. You know, I had to do it all of it sort of secretly or without their permission.
Not even your mom's permission.
The thing is that when you're in also this really intense household that's quite abusive, it's like whatever the father, the man of the house is dictating, you have to sort of go along or you risk the turmoil. And like my parents, they were fighting. It was very, very, very like intense all the time. So when you're in this pressure cooker, you're innately like silenced and you can't do you. You can't be who you want to be. And no one's listening because at the end of the day, like your job is to go to school. Like everyone has a job in that household. You know, everyone has to do what's expected of them. But that was also that those intense contradictions because I'm going to a school filled with like kids from all walks of life. Like I was very fortunate through my academic accolades. I went to private school for middle school, high school, and then a private institution for university, for college. So I was always around people that were so different from me. So when I would come back home, I was in a completely different world. You know, that's a mind fuck in your developing of your brain. And at some points, I felt like going to these incredible schools was actually like a disservice because it was amazing for what it was. And I excelled in those spaces. They were safe spaces for me. But at the same time, when you're a young, queer, brown body, and also it's like a class struggle because, you know, mm-hmm. I didn't come from money and I'm with all of these kids that have so much money that are casually like, you know, they live a block away from the school. Meanwhile, I'm an hour and a half getting to and from school. You know, there was structures that kept us so separated. So like,
yeah,
I didn't see it in the moment because I was just existing and doing what was expected of me. But at the same time, that added to like my own internal turmoil of feeling different.
What was expected of you by your mother and father?
I think what was expected for me was to sort of A, do really well in school, be like follow all of, you know, their sort of orders. Primarily, it was my father. It was a lot of pressure from him. And lucky had it, like, I already enjoyed school. Like, I enjoyed, you know, being in that space because that was my form of escapism from the turmoil of being in the house. So I really enjoyed being there. And yeah, I think the expectations was also the way in which I looked and the way that I existed. Like I needed to be a boy. I needed to like all of these things. And there was no expansion when you're on the spectrum of gender identity, especially at a young age, because I was very effeminate. You know, I was always the individual that all of the girls were my friends, but I was friends with everyone. But at the same time, like I always felt really safe in spaces with other femmes, like just expressing myself. And in a way, when I came home, I had to sort of conceal a lot of that because it made them uncomfortable. Even the way I dressed, like in high school, like, you know, I had so many different identities when I was in school. Like I was just playing with fashion and playing with clothes. And when I came home, I had to be very quick and very sharp to conceal those things because I couldn't deal with the bombarded by my psycho father who wanted no inkling of being different in his home. My dad would openly speak horrific negative things about queer people, like say like really insane things. And it's like, you know, when you're being brainwashed at home, because that's like how your brain is formulated. And then you go to these spaces where I went to a Quaker high school where like everyone was colorful. Everything was like namaste. And everyone was like, be who you are, like teaching these very gnarly principles to someone like myself that actually made me feel seen and made me feel safe because I could exist in this outerworldly way and not be chastised for it. And so it's like, how do you do the expectations at home at the same time of just also being yourself? You know, like it's so much for a young person that now in retrospect, I'm like, wow, I went through a lot because I have like such a gnarly master forgetter, like represser where I don't remember anything because it's like my survival instinct. It's like I've had to like push a lot of things down. And now because my life is in a sense like very stable, but it's like now a lot of those like flashback of very insane things that I endured come back into my brain. And I'm like, that's what I mean, like making peace with like my inner child, like the childhood that I didn't necessarily have, you know?
Mm-hmm. We've spoken about your father, but I'd love to speak about your mum. I know she was such a kind of integral part of your upbringing and then a massive encouragement in you to be your true self. What did that look like at that age, you know, as she was kind of adhering to also her husband's, you know, like rules and also her kind of own cultural background?
I think my mom always saw in me like possibility. She always saw a go-getter. I always had such an active imagination. And so through my eyes, she was able to see the world. She was able to see like what an alternate existence could be because I always really enjoyed like being a storyteller.
I love that. I read that in an article in the New York Times, which I thought was such a beautiful way to put it because obviously she was blind towards the end of her life and being the storyteller to show her what's out there. I thought it was such a beautiful kind of image.
My mom also was like so big on travel and like seeing other spaces. So we really bonded. Like I actually remember my first trip that I did like without my family. I went to London on like an exchange program when I was 14. And my mom was just so excited for me to like go and see the world. And like, she always had such a strong affinity for the UK. And she was like, oh my God, you're going to love it. And I'll never forget. She like took me into her room and like gave me like a wad of cash that she was like hiding in her room. She had like her weird like financial ecosystem like happening in the bedroom. And she just gave me this money. She was like, have fun, go and like go shopping. And now when I look back at it, I was like, wow, I was really blessed that, you know, my family didn't have much, but she gave me that money knowing that I was going to go have an experience that I would come back and she would have gotten to experience as well. When I was in high school and my mom's health was like deteriorating and declining, that sort of dysfunction, it caused me to really rebel and like reject home. And so I couldn't come home to like see what was happening. It was too much for me. And so I would go home and like appease them by being there. But like that dysfunction, even to like the last days of my mom's life, it was just so numbing. Just to see her in that state like caused me like so much because then I kind of also realized before her passing, like once she leaves us in this physical sense, I'm going to be alone. I kind of had that intuition that I already knew what it was going to look like because I knew my authentic self was not going to be embraced warmly at home. And so when she left us, I was in the midst of like college applications, all of these like really intense things for like a young college student, and then also going into the framework of going to school with like all of these kids that have like the means and all the things. Like it was so trippy And I was like dealing with so much trauma and drama and so much, but like my escapism was like, I need to get out of this. Like I need to wrap this up and go to college.
So was that the path you think she set you on?
Absolutely. I think because I needed to go to school to fulfill my mom's wishes of me being the first person in my family to go to university, because nobody had went to university in America. So it was like a very, very, very big deal that I didn't treat lightly. So even like with all of the fucked up shit that was happening at home, I was like, I need to get this done. I need to rise to the occasion because I'm no longer just doing this for myself. I'm doing this for her and her legacy that she worked so hard to like push me to these moments that I can't forget it. And I can't think about, oh, the ones that are negating who I am, my dad. And so I just made it my mission to finish high school and go to college. And through all of that grief and that loss, it was like running a marathon. But I was also, in a sense, running away from myself because I didn't necessarily like embrace fully who I was, because it wasn't that moment. I wasn't allocated that time and that experience to like find myself. I was on that queer chasing of, oh, it's going to get better, but it has to look a certain way. Like I have to be out of the situation. And I remember when I was having these conversations with my father about my identity, and he like wouldn't even like listen to me. He was just like being so combative and being so, what about our family's name? And all of this like hocus pocus, like bullshit things. I'm like, this has nothing to do with any of these people. This is about me. Like, I don't give two shits about all of these people and this, that, and the third. And he was just so hell-bent on
the disgrace that it would bring to the family.
Exactly. The like, this is going to like really cause such a disruption. But meanwhile, I was like, not really. Like, now when I look at that like smack in the face, I think that it gave me more courage. It gave me more willingness to be like, you know what? I'm not welcome here, but I'm going to find exactly where I need to be. And the same way my life is constantly on a mission of seeking, I think that this just means that as numbing as it is, I'm good. I'm good on this. Like I'm actually like really, really good on this, because I know that there is more for me and I know that I can figure it out. I've spent my whole life like mapping out what this world is. And I just knew that there was more for me. I didn't necessarily know what it was going to look like, but I knew that there was more. And like familial rejection is like, it can be really, really scarring, really closes off people. And I think within the queer community, it's like we find family amongst ourselves because we can all really relate on that rejection from home or not being able to be ourselves. And I think that I didn't even necessarily have that knowledge at that moment of what else there was for me in the world. I was really scared and I was living in a lot of fear, but I knew that once you have the courage to say who you are, you know that in a way you can do anything. You know that the world is like so expansive and it's so large and like, I'm going to be just fine because I don't need to be here.
If you know you, I think it's something that's very much kind of inherent to your life is this idea of this found family and this chosen family. I think there's something so beautiful about the people that you kind of navigate the world with. You're so connected and you take one another with you wherever you go in terms of like career and life and ambition. And I just wanted to ask you about the importance of found family as someone who's kind of had to disconnect from family and how they came into your life and how they've inspired and encouraged you to be the person that you are today.
You know, that idea of like blood being thicker than water, I like really don't agree with that at all. I think it is such a silly term. And also I remember when my mom used to say like, are you going to jump off the bridge if your friend jumps off the bridge? And be like, yeah, I'm going to jump off the bridge now. I think my found family is my family.
Yeah.
Yes, we chose each other, but I would do anything for the people that have kept me afloat and kept me going. Like we really embrace each other and we see each other. And I think that there is a beauty of being able to really see someone like where they are and like give them the tools they need. And we like collectively heal each other and we heal one another. And I think that, you know, there's never a dull moment. We operate, if anything, stronger than a family because we're not concealing things. And if you sense someone is concealing something, you beat it out of them. You're like, what is happening? How can I help you? Like, we're all very service oriented of helping each other through whatever catastrophe may be happening.
And I suppose that comes naturally to you having been a caregiver for so much of your childhood.
Yeah, I think that between me and my girls, like we kind of all have that broken home syndrome where like things weren't necessarily the easiest or the best at home. So when we came together and built home, we were like living beyond our wildest dreams of like, oh, like we can actually like have the home that we didn't necessarily have. And the way we see each other is really, it's really fun too, because it's like, I have found myself many times like embracing change or looking at a different way of seeing something because it's being articulated in a way to me that isn't like repressing or quite regressive. It's like, oh, like, you know, there's more possibility. And I find that when you find your people that, you know you, they'll be like, you should try this or this will help you feel or something. And that's also really cool because it's people that really see each other for who they are. And there isn't this weird like front. I like to say, you know, when Thanksgiving happens or Christmas happens, it's like, you guys go away to your families. And it's like, well, we're still here. Those holidays, I'm with my girls and we're, you know, celebrating each other and giving thanks for our collective community that we've built. And a lot of very like bittersweet moments between my friends and I, you know, we've had like a lot of tragedy in our friend group. Like we've lost friends. And a part of growing up is like, I've had a lot of loss and death, especially with like strong femme individuals that have shaped me and that have given me the like the grace of freedom to explore my transness and my identity. And like, I think that now more than ever, I feel like I'm being protected by all of these strong matriarchal spirits that are like holding me down and telling me like, you're good, like you're on the path. Cause like, you know, I think talking about that metaphysical like existence, I definitely feel like there's a lot of protection and a lot of angels around me. And I remember when I finished college, I didn't know what I was going to do with my life. And I was just like really happy that I finished that crazy, chaotic moment. But I remember when I got back to New York and I moved in with my girlfriends, Julia and Brianna, I was partying a lot and I was like drinking a lot and doing drugs and like really like glued to the party because that was like my form of escapism. And now when I look back at it, I was like quite suicidal and quite like, oh my God, like I didn't want to be here because I finally started seeing my life without my mom. All of my abandonment issues were coming back. And like, you know, I've been out of the house since I was 16 or 17, but it didn't hit me until I was 21. Because I've been chasing, I've been living around the world and doing all these things.
How did they hold you during that time?
To be honest, if it weren't for them, I don't think I would still be here. Like giving me the tools to like be who I am, but like physically holding me, embracing all of my nuances and the things that I didn't even see in myself. So when I got back to New York and literally I moved in with them, I so fearful, so scared, and like going out all the time and like having all these like near-death experiences that, you know, were me like really just trying to like deal with my nerves and my anxiety, but I didn't have the tools. And like I got sober like that summer, and it was like the first time like being like in a group of like people where I felt at home and I felt warmth and I felt embraced. And it was such a gnarly time in New York too. Like there were so many things going on and like, I was just really like lost in the sauce because I didn't really know like the possibility of being or existing. You know, I think it was really catching up to me. And through living like with my girlfriends and like embracing this new passageway of being sober and being like a young person, I was really able to like even more channel my risk-taking and channel like my inner ambitions of being an artist and being a creative.
Yeah, I think that's so beautifully put. It's like when you get sober, I love that idea. It's like technically when you're not in sobriety, when you're in active addiction, you are taking these risks, these very toxic ones. But when you actually find sobriety or whatever that looks like for the individual, you start taking risks that look completely different. You start taking risks that kind of challenge you and get you out of your comfort zones in a more kind of nurturing and self-reflective way.
Absolutely. I think also being fearful of like what people think of me or like how I see myself, but realizing that I have always been very subversive, you know, the way in which I was existing. And I didn't even have the terminology of like being trans or all of the incredible verbiage that we have of identity and of existing. And it was my girlfriends holding me down. My sister is telling me like, you can be whoever you want to be. And we're here, we got your back. And like, you're going to be safe because, you know, obviously they bear witness to like all of the hardships that I endured, but never once did they judge me. Because it's like, we're so fearful of like being judged or being seen because of the hard pathways that we've been put on. And at a certain point, I had to like let go of like the old me and like make room for the new me. And that's why I think that sobriety really turned things over in this way of like also connecting with like these incredible goddess like spirits that speak to me and make me feel whole and make me feel like less alone. I think it allowed me to really connect with myself in a very cerebral way that wasn't possible before. I just really enjoyed being in spaces where I could just rage and like scream and shout. I was just also a baby, you know, where like we're constantly like not realizing that we're making all of these really insane mistakes because we don't know any better. There's no one that's like telling us, you know, what the alternative could look like.
You've spoken about community and finding one's tribe. And this is something that kind of, it can take quite a long time for some people. And I do think it's a very integral part. I think once you do find it, it's very much an important part of who I am and has shaped the person that I kind of continue to become. But as someone who has a very great understanding of friendship in its most authentic sense, not attached to ambition or materialistic things, that you understand friendship in its like true form. When you navigate friendship, what are the things that you keep close? What are the things that kind of guide you? Because, you know, we all go through different things like you were just talking about, and we're all having to hold each other up or we grow apart. I'm in this point in my life where, you know, I'm 31 and I have friends that are still living quite kind of chaotic and unhinged like lives, but it's also half of it is just kind of allowing and creating the space where they have to kind of get to a place in their own kind of way. And also there's another side to that where it's like, you know, I want to stay close and make sure that they know that they have a safe space to come to.
I think for me, big parts of friendship is like embracing someone's unapologeticness, like being a really good listener. Also like the silencing of like jealousy and envy. I think that when you're in like really intense friendships of like, we watch out and we look out for each other, it's all about building each other up. You know, if someone has a hope or a dream or ambition, it's like finding solution to be there. And like, I just get really excited. I have a lot of enthusiasm for others winning. And if I win, everyone wins. You know, it's like, we're all very communal and sharing each other's wins, but also their losses. You know, it's like if something really insane happens, we're there to like pick each other up. And I think that things aren't as like perfect as they may seem. I think, you know, when people can see things on Instagram, they're like, oh my God, like this and that's happening. But like, they don't know all of the like hard work and all of the like inner demons that are talking you through it, you know? And I think that within really hardcore friendship groups, it's important to like find your people that guide you through it and like tell you, no, you're good enough, you're a bad bitch, like you're fucking killing it and you're doing so great. And you know what? If someone says no, that means next opportunity. It means like you got to keep it moving. Like failing is so important because it gives you that tough skin. And I feel really grateful and I'm always in gratitude. That's the thing about me. Like, I'm excited to wake up in the morning, even on my days of being a little like, oh my God, like dredging my feet. I just know that there's more for me out there. And I also feel really grateful to like make opportunities for others. And I think that I work with so many incredible young people that inspire me and that look at me in this way. And I'm like, I want to teach them the, like the tools and, you know, having that stamina and having that strength, like, everything's not as easy as the internet may make it seem. There's so much hard work that goes into everything that we do. And I have a lot of gratitude for my sisters because we all work together, you know? So we're like, we're in the like nitty gritty of it always. You know, there's always a project or something that's going on. And even if I'm not actively working on it, I know what's happening. So if there's ways that I could be of service to like make whatever they're going through or working on, make it easier, I'm going to show up. It's like, we all have the language now. We all like understand and see each other. Like, I know something's going on with them not even having to tell me. Like, I already know what's up. Like, we just look each other in the eyes. We finish each other's sentences and we know what's good. Because I think when you live, work, share space, you really get to see all of the sides of your friends. And like, I yearn to like, make them feel safe, you know, because they feel so safe and like so like taken care of. I feel like I was like blessed with this like beautiful warm cushion. We're all sort of like flying together in this like very beautiful, in this beautiful way. But I think friendship is also like, it's also very thrilling because even when we're not good and we're fighting and things are popping, like it gets so lit in the kitchen, but it's like with your family, you know that there's going to be repair. You know, it's like, I'm just having a rough moment. We're not seeing eye to eye, but like, I still got you. I'm not going to love you any less.
Yeah.
I was brought up with that idea that you had to like appease the people around you. But actually, no, we have to like be heard and be seen and like speak up for yourself and don't silence yourself to make someone feel better. Like, it doesn't work that way. If there's a problem, we need to embrace it and we need to find solution together.
Yeah. You spoke about how you work together as well, and you're very much an artist amongst many other things in front and behind the camera. How do you utilize your art to imagine a different future?
I think through my art, I've always been someone that pushes boundaries. And I think through my art, it allows people to question things. It allows people to really ask questions that they're scared to know the answer. And I think that creating imagery that's provocative and subversive, it's like, those are things that are innately who I am. So I want my work to also be an extension of that. And I want to push envelopes, but at the same time, like, I like empowering individuals and making them feel beautiful and making them feel strong and like also seeing them in an alternate way. I think that we're constantly evolving and changing. Like, our taste buds are constantly being refocused. And I think that I really just enjoy seeing things differently and not following the status quo. I think that there's constantly ways of making the bar higher.
And you explore gender identity very much in your work. What advice do you have for someone exploring their own identity?
Yeah, I think like there is no rule book of existing. I think we're all so different. And I think once you understand the beauty of like how you exist and also like how you want to exist, we constantly are pushing ourselves to like be a certain way or exist a certain way. And it's like just being in radical acceptance of like, this is who I am and this is how I see myself. I think it's all about that radical acceptance, but also just being a bit warmer and being a bit like softer with ourselves. It's like, everyone's body is different. Everyone, the way they look, the way they see themselves. And for me, it's like, you know, I have a lot of PTSD from like my background, but I wear my Guyanese identity like on my body. You know, it's like really important because I think that we're also pushing the conversation of like the beautiful diversity of our people. Like my West Indian heritage, I think that it's something that really impacts and inspires my work. You know, those colors and those intricacies and those contradictions, they're all things that are worth pushing and worth creating more visibility. Like for me, I love when other West Indian femmes, like people like reach out to me and they're like, oh my God, like you have no idea. Like you've given me the strength to exist and telling me all these things that are so warm and so positive. Because sometimes you can feel like, oh my God, like, am I the only person that's like this? Or like, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, no, like there's so many others that are on similar paths. And I think that that's been really, really cool and given me a lot more courage to continue.
I think about this quite often, and it was something I definitely, I mean, maybe it was always there, but I think it was something that was really thrust on me when I kind of got sober and started kind of finding my own way as an individual. But I want to talk a little bit about purpose, because I do think that is in many ways, a grounding force for this idea that what you said, you know, life is life and it's very messy and chaotic. But even on the shit days, like you said, I wake up. And even though I might be a bit like, oh, I'm excited for what the day might bring, I think that is largely to do with the fact that I feel very much rooted in a purpose. And I feel like that is like my whole being. I know what I'm here to do. And I really have a deeper understanding of my capability, you know, and this idea that there will forever be more. But I think if I'm up for it and I give back to the universe, and I love that you're a big manifester as well. I don't think you just sit there and want. I think you need to also give to the universe and hope that it will kind of return the favor. But what's your purpose, and has it changed, or does it feel like the same one when you think about Richie back in the day?
I think my purpose has always been like being of service and helping people. Mm. And I think that throughout whatever sort of occupation I have is always like restoring and helping others. I think that through like my sobriety, but also just who I've always been, it's always been really important to like be of service and be a helping hand in this like chaotic world that we live in, but also like really appreciate and cherish one another. It's like life is so short. So it's like, why not fuck shit up, but at the same time, like create space for others and like don't sort of like erase the thoughts in your head because you're trying to fit some mold. I think that it's so important to like really listen to yourself and really help someone who's in need. There's just like so much toxicity and like people that aren't really stand up people. And I think that, to be honest, it's like even in like my public persona of sorts, I have like my own internal like pushback of like being open or being honest about like my struggles or like what is happening. I'm constantly like going through something in my brain. But when I realize those moments that I really open up and I connect and like let people know what's happening, it helps and it's restorative. So I'm also like coming to terms with like being more open and honest with my voice and embrace those raw emotions. And I think that my continuous purpose also is that I am very ambitious and I want to like create space for the girlies that look like myself and show them that there's like endless possibility. It's like I've been given so much from others because they believed in like my vision. So I feel like I have to like pay it forward. And like even with working within the fashion and art landscape, I find so much is that we're not in the rooms of like decision making. And so as I'm entering those realms and speaking to these gatekeepers, letting them know like, why is it important for us to be here? It's like that continuous work is so essential and so important and necessary. And that's not something that I take lightly. I think it's very important to like continue to do that work because we're entering so many spaces that weren't built for us. You know, they were built for a certain individual and we're breaking a lot of those molds. And with that comes a lot of labor intensive conversation. So it's like most of the time I'm actually quite exhausted. It's so much work, but it's also at the same time, I know that the fruits of my labor, I know that this is like very important. And that's why like, I do know the power of my voice and standing up for what's right. So I think that that's definitely been my new purpose, my continuous purpose.
What are the next molds that we're trying to break, Richie? You're continuously doing incredible things, but What's on that list?
I think right now is like sort of like financial security, like continuously like trying to like do more projects and like put myself out there. I worked on a film last year and I worked on a book this year, and like it really showed me that there's like so many possibilities of storytelling. So it's like that's something that I want to continue, like expand on the mediums in which I work in and tell more stories that aren't even like necessarily my own, but they're just things that I think are important. I think also I want to continue to travel and like see the world and like meet others like myself that are in the thick of it and like providing like hope and promise. I just think connecting with people like IRL is really, really important to me. And I want to like just continue to see like what's happening in the world and having important conversations and also just like having fun with my loved ones. I think that we all work so much, and like just to have those moments where we really just key and like, because even if we're all just sitting on a couch, we're having a good time because we're in like each other's company. But I just want to continue to make that a priority.
Yeah. You know, we've spoken about many beautiful things, and you're the most like articulate, wise woman ever. Your experience, obviously, although singular, like you said, we realize when we share kind of our true self and things that feel very painful, we're kind of welcomed to a whole universe of people who can really relate to our story. And that's really the beauty of this whole thing. And, you know, what we kind of aim and advocate for at Girls Talk. But you've spoken so much about breaking away from a kind of toxic environment and persevering through that. I want to know if you have any advice. You know, I think we'll have so many listeners who can relate to your story, and I wanted to know if you had any advice for anyone listening who's trying, who's ready, who's thinking about it, who's in a predicament where they feel like that's the only option, like you said, that that's their way that they're going to survive. Like, do you have any advice for anyone breaking away from a toxic environment and one that, you know, is a family as well?
I think my biggest piece of advice is that just never give up on your hopes and dreams, and knowing that there are like individuals out there that you need to like connect with. You need to like find your tribes of people, whether it be like on the internet or IRL, like going to like spaces where others like you exist. And it may be a little difficult at first, like finding exactly like where you need to be. But, you know, I took a lot of risk in putting myself out there. And I think that, you know, life is all about, you know, that leap of faith. You won't know until you try it, and you won't know. And like, whatever your situation is, it's like, do as much as you can within that framework to like prioritize your health and your wellness and like make sure that you're taken care of. And when that moment hopefully can arise, you can like break free from it. Because, you know, I've had a lot of intense tragedy, like so much really, really intense fucked up shit that had happened to me. But it's like, I have to remember, like, I'm still here. I didn't die as a result of it. I refuse to like become a statistic. You know, I refuse to like numb out the pain till the point that I wouldn't be here. I had to like know that I was enough and that I'm worthy of like seeing the, mm-hmm. the riches of the world, you know, because we're like outer worldly beings that our government, our world is working so hard to like silence us because they're so threatened by our identities. But really, it's like they're just threatened by seeing their true selves. It's like my father's rejection of me. It's like he didn't like that I was so free, that I was in freedom. And it's like being free is like such a foreign concept when you think about it, because all of these sort of like heteronormative, like homogenizing, like factors that rule us, like they don't know what real freedom is. And I think that, you know, we have to find ways of being free, but freedom starts from within. You know, you have to like really like nurture who you are and just know that you're enough and that you're beautiful and that you're so beyond, because you don't exist how they want you to exist. And that is like so scary for them. But really, it's like, no, like I'm good either or, like, because I'm enough. So I've had to like really own that and embrace it and like be gentle with myself, you know, because we are enough and we are really, really powerful and doing things that a lot of people don't have the courage to do.
Oh, thank you so much, Richie. That was such a perfect, I got a little bit emotional there. I can't tell you how much that's going to mean to all our lovely listeners. So I can't thank you enough for being on the Girls Talk podcast, for taking the time after a long haul flight from Beirut and looking so glamorous whilst doing it. I can't believe you just got off a flight.
No, I love you. And I'm so grateful that I got to speak with you. And I'm just so excited to like continue to connect, knowing that there's like such a beautiful, vibrant community of individuals. It's like, we're all doing this together. And we all
exactly,
we all have to be there and like show up. And like, we are a family of individuals that are willing to like, hold each other and embrace each other. And I think that that's really special.
And I also think there's something to say about, and this is something that I definitely see within your kind of group of friends. It's like, there's so much space for all of us. And it's so much more exciting when we're all there together. Do you know what I mean? I don't know, that looks differently for all different, you know, career types and individuals. But that's something I love about doing this, is just having this conversation. I've had, you know, an hour where I've got to listen to you. There's something very beautiful in just that. And also, you know, we can't do it just by ourselves. So it's connections like this. It used to navigate Fashion Week and be like, oh God, this is so kind of like tiresome in many ways. And now there you are, front row, or doing your thing, or your book, or on Instagram. And it's just like, yeah, if this is what the community is going to be like, then I'll be here forever. If it just keeps on getting like better and more inclusive, or, you know, more nuanced and inspiring. And you're very much part of that. So thank you.
No, I'm like so grateful, because it's true. It's like, you know, in the spaces in which we work in, like people don't realize that you don't necessarily get to like key and like talk and like understand like where people are coming from, you know, because everyone's in their like facade of like work and like everyone's like so in it. But it's really special because I've had so many incredible friendships that have developed over time, because we're all in these spaces that are so like intense and so hardcore. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, they're very special and we're really grateful to be in them. But it's also like they really break you and break you down emotionally, and you're constantly like not feeling enough. But it's really your friends and your peers that pick you up, and they're like, they see you, and it's like we keep each other through our little motions, like, oh, we're in it. They're signs, like this all makes sense. Cause it's like, as fun as it may look, it's so intense and chaotic and can make you feel quite alone and isolated.
Mm-hmm. I love you, Richie. Thank you so much for being on the Girls Talk podcast, and to all my lovely listeners. I hope you enjoyed this as much as I did. And as always, mad, mad, mad amounts of love.
I love you so much.
I love you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much to the wonderful Richie for joining us on the Girls Talk podcast. You can follow Richie at Richie Shazam. Mad, mad, mad amounts of love.
We may have stopped talking, but that doesn't mean you have to. Talk to us on our Instagram at Girls Talk, or send us your poetry, essays, stories, artwork, or anything else you want to share at girlstalk.com. This week's podcast was produced by Girls Talk and Wicked Child Studio. Original music composed by Mikey Long. Mad, mad, mad love to Jo Malone London for their generous support of the podcast. And as always, we are always here and we're always listening. I'm Adjoa Boa, and this was the Girls Talk podcast.